originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Pena and Jude Feld.
Good afternoon once again, everyone, and welcome to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network, the show trainers listen to, and we are happy to have you listening tonight on Sirius 219, XM 206, and all of you tuning in worldwide on our website at horseracingradio.net. Welcome to the program, and looking forward to another fun visit over the course of the next hour on the program tonight. I'm Mike Pena, alongside retired top trainer Jude Feld, the pontiff of the Pick Four. We are positioned in our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios, and JT, as I mentioned, this should be another fun hour here tonight.
Yeah, really looking forward to it. Our guest is super hot right now, just en fuego, and it's really cool to see.
Yeah, really on a roll and pointing for the Breeders' Cup at Del Mar. We're going to tell you more about that as we move throughout the program, but without further ado, tonight's guest is a native of Evansville, Indiana. He first joined us on this program back in 2013, but a lot has happened since 2013 for this trainer. And as a matter of fact, he has trained a total of 421 winners to date. His runners have earned more than $11 million in purses, thanks in large part to horses like his most recent stable star, Bullard's Alley, who upset the Grade 1 Pattison Canadian International at Woodbine this past Sunday at odds of 42-1. And not only did he win that race as the second longest shot on the board, he did it by a record margin of, get this, 10¾ lengths. If you're going to upset a Grade 1, that's the way you do it. Hashtag awesome. Tim Gleishaw with us here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Tim, welcome.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, let's start with that unbelievable performance this past Sunday. You must still be on cloud nine.
Yeah, we're still all thrilled. The owner, everyone in the barn, took all the barn out to eat for lunch yesterday. You know, we've always known that he's a really, really nice horse. You know, up at Canada, I got asked after the race by about 40 reporters, you know, can I explain that performance? And I really can't. I know that we all know he loves an soft turf. And allows him to stay closer without having to try too hard. We know that he really, or we suspected he really liked Woodbine the way he ran there earlier this year, and everything just went right. And, you know, there was a 40-mile-an-hour headwind. Maybe the other horses didn't like it. I'm not sure, but it didn't bother him. So, you know, the numbers and everything, I can't explain. Did we always think that he could run a race and win a race like that? If everything went right, yes. But by the margin that he did and the buyer speed figure he got and all that kind of stuff, you know, that was never expected. Of course it wasn't. I mean, I would, you know, I don't know who could have expected that. So,
what was going through your mind when you're watching him pull away and win by that many lengths through the stretch?
Well, to be quite honest with you, since we had already been up there once and we opened up two and Javier Castellano rode him in the Sing Spiel, he opened up about two and then got nailed on the wire. So, you know, I could hear in the back behind me, my owners were like really, really happy he was up by two. And, of course, I was happy as well. But I remember that sometimes he hangs and, you know, he got nailed at the wire up there. So it wasn't going through my head that we were going to win until he got up by about five. And then, you know, I was thinking in my head the only way he loses from, you know, so, and then after that, when he opened up more and more and more, that was just like icing on the cake. Part of that was because Eureka, we had told him, he had watched the last five races, and we told him that sometimes he hangs, and I guarantee you, he just wanted to make sure he didn't. You know, nobody went out to try to win that race by that margin. He was just making sure that the horse didn't hang, and And, you know, I've seen some comments on social media about they didn't like the way the jock continued to whip the horse. Well, you know, they really don't know the history of the horse, and he has a tendency to hang sometimes. So you just don't take those kind of chances in those kind of races. So.
Yeah, sometimes when horses open up like that, they kind of lose their way. We've seen it happen repeatedly, fans sometimes don't get it. I mean, it wasn't like he was pounding on the horse, really. He was just keeping his mind on business.
That's correct. All trainers have some of those kind of horses in the barn. When they hit the front, they just don't know. Or when they, like you had said, that when they open up a couple lengths, they just start looking, waiting on other horses is what we call it, and just start looking around. And he doesn't do that, but he does have a tendency to slow down a little bit sometimes when he gets the lead. So, Eurico, I couldn't be happier for him. They had told me, and I didn't know until after the race, that that's the first time that he has ever won that race up there, which is, you know, one of, if not their premier race. So that was great for him, and you know, glad we could get him. So, you know, you never go wrong when you can use a leading rider at a track where you're going to ride a stake. So
talk about what's next for Bullard's Bay. Is it on to the Breeders' Cup, or is there still some decisions to be made?
Well, I'm meeting with Bullard's Alley's owners.
Bullard's Bay. Bullard's Alley.
Has a horse in today at Keeneland. Horse named 3-year-old named Dark Arden in the third race. So after tonight, we're meeting and discussing. You know, I mean, to be quite honest with you, there's a ton of places that we could go. The Japan World or the Japan Cup people talked to us after the race. The Hong Kong people have talked to us. Obviously, the owners are all excited about that kind of stuff. But my problem is my job is to protect the horse. Our horse has run on Lasix his whole life. The idea of pulling him off to go run in one of those kind of races, which would be by far the toughest race he's ever been in his life, just to get a free trip to go to Japan or Hong Kong, which, believe me, I'd love to do, but I just don't think it's best for the horse. So I sort of have nixed those two ideas with them. Of course, it will be discussed tonight. They own the horse. What they decide is final, but there's still consideration for the Breeders' Cup. The bad part of the Breeders' Cup, it is back sort of quick, but Bullard's Alley, you know, won a stake for us 8 days after he won a 3 other than at Churchill, or 9 days, you know, last year. So the quick turnaround, that's not going to be an excuse for him if we go out there and we run poorly. The other thing is that, you know, what equals the playing field with him and horses on paper that are nicer than him is a yielding turf course, and you're not going to get that at Del Mar. The positive sides of going to Breeders' Cup are that, you know, Wayne Spaulding's probably owned horses for 10 years now, maybe 12, and Farron's sort of a little newer in the game, but maybe 3 or 4 years, and I've told them that you can do this for 30 more years and probably never have a horse that Breeders' Cup, you know, worthy to go. I've sort of, you know, they can't tell you, the Breeders' Cup people can't, that if we'd be in or we wouldn't, because the top 7 spots in that division are taken by winning your in races, and then the next 7 would be up to the selection committee. But I've gotten some pretty good indications with the kind of performance he had and the numbers he ran and the points he attained by that he would be one of the ones that's invited. And then the other option is, I don't even know the name of the stake. This is really bad of me because it's been crazy since I've been back, but I know that on October 13th, there's a 1 3/8 stake on the turf at Aqueduct, where you would probably get a strong chance of having a softer turf because, you know, it's New York in November. So I'm not sure what the plans are. Those will be finalized tonight. There's some logistic plans also that are a little bit problem with the Breeders' Cup. As of right now, I got the last spot with Gushero, my other horse, going for the Breeders' Cup sprint. So that's on Tech Sutton, and they're full. Their 3 flights are full. So we would, in the end, if that stays like that, we would have to FedEx ship Bullard's Alley out, which I've done a few times. That's not a problem. But there could also be a cancellation on Tech Sutton. He can get on, you know, one of the flights out there with Tech Sutton as well. So it's all up in the air. But in my mind, it's down to either the Aqueduct race or the Breeders' Cup. And then that's the owner's decision because, you know, that race is $4 million. It's $50,000 to pre-enter and $50,000 to enter. So that's going to cost them $100,000. And So the horses made a lot of money and just made 400 American about, you know, that's still their 100 grand. So that they're going to have to come off of dinner. So, you know, it's really going to be their decision, but it'll be an interesting conversation tonight.
Wow. How about that, JT? You get a horse that proves worthy of running in a race like the Breeders' Cup or the Japan Cup, and then all of these decisions come into play. It's not as cut and dry as it would seem.
No, it never is. People think horse racing is easy, but it's really not. And there's a lot of things to be considered. And of course, the Lasix being one of the issues, and travel, and then the 100 grand is an issue for most people. So, you know, it is tough, but it sounds like you really have a good grasp, Tim, of what you want to do, and I'm hoping they side with you. I'm always on the side of the trainer.
Yeah. Well, they've been very good owners to us. Wayne has some horses by himself with us. They've been with us for about 6 years, and Farron owns parts of a couple of them, and you know, they do listen to me. You know, this is a most of the time, Wayne, if I tell him what we need to do, he'll do it. This is just a little tough for me because I can't tell somebody that they have to spend 100 grand. Then I feel like I'm responsible for if he goes out and finishes 7th or 8th and makes – well, 7th or 8th still gets you 40, so that's a bad example, but back in the Breeders' Cup. But if he finishes 9th or 10th, you know what I mean, and they make nothing back, then – you know, then I feel I'm sort of responsible for that. So the conversation tonight is going to revolve around, you know, look, you put this 100 grand up, you're not guaranteed to get anything back. Do I think that just because of his running style, even on a fast turf course, he sits back, he'll be further back because they'll go faster in front of him, but he'll put in a run and he'll close and he'll get something, I think. I mean, you know, I can't see him not at least being mid-pack in there to at least recoup some of the 100 grand, but it's horse racing, and you can never guarantee that. I mean, he just showed, you know, he just put a perfect example of that up at Woodbine. So, you know, my point to them and the point that I'm stressing is that's pretty much, besides for us around here, while the Kentucky Derby is the biggest day, even though the purse is not as big, but that's the biggest day of racing is the Breeders' Cup. And you know, when you have a chance, and if it's not going to financially put you out to do it, I think you have to take that opportunity. But you know, I got out that last performance, I'm sure he's probably 2-1 or less in the race at Aqueduct. So, you know, the Japan race, the Hong Kong race, I have no problem racing him without his anti-inflammatories, no problem racing him without GastroGuard, no problem racing him without, you know, those kinds of things. But he has, you know, bled before on us, not very often, only 2 times in his whole career, but the idea of taking a horse like that off of Lasix and going and ask them to run the race of their life after spending 17 hours on a plane and 11 hours van ride, which was the Japan, I think, it just doesn't seem like it's, you know, he's earned, in my mind, us to protect him, to put him in a place where we think he can have an opportunity to be successful. And to run in either of those two races, though it's very much of an honor to be invited to those two places and everything else, I just can't think that that's what's best for Bullard. And that's sort of my job when the owners get all excited about a free trip to Japan or something, is to, you know, sort of tell them, look, we got to do what's best for the horse here. And I don't think that's it. But at the end of the day, like I said, you do what the owners tell you, because we don't want them to go anywhere else. So,
talking with trainer Tim Gleishaw here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Tim, you mentioned the name Buchero, who won the Woodford Stakes at Keeneland on October 7th. Now, here's what strikes me. You saddled one graded stakes winner in your first 14 years of training on your own. All of a sudden, you get two in 8 days, including your first grade one. What are you doing now that's working so well?
Really haven't changed anything. You know, it's the same old grind. You know, I mean, it gets disappointing and frustrating sometimes. It's been very, very rewarding to us to have this happen after the way our year started. You know, we were in the quarantine down at Fairgrounds. Our barn was one of the ones quarantined. It pretty much came really close to putting us out of business. And then, things like this happen. It just shows why you stick with it the whole time and keep continuing to do things. And, you know, it's the same way that, you know, I had three or four of my owners call me and say, you know, have you gotten a whole bunch of calls from people wanting to send you horses? Nope, not one, you know. I mean, nobody's called me, you know. Seems like everybody wants their horses with the big name trainers, and I get that. I think some will come, you know. I mean, it'll help our business some, but I mean, I'm just happy for us. I'm happy for our horses and for my wife that's my assistant at Churchill, and for our help that's been with us a long time. And, you know, if it means picking up some more horses, obviously that's great, because, you know, we could definitely use that. But if it doesn't, then, but we've done everything the same that we've always done it. Bushero has always probably, the fact be known, been a turf sprinter. If he wasn't an Indiana bred, he probably would have run his whole life in turf sprints. But he's an Indiana bred, and you got to take advantage of that program up there. You know, he's won the Brickyard up there, which is 6 furlongs on the dirt now twice, and he's won the mile in the 16th, the Too Much Coffee, 2 years in a row. That's $150,000, and well, that's what we'll be passing up this year to send him to the Breeders' Cup Sprint. But it goes back to what I said before. You know, Iron Horse Racing owns him. Harlan Malter's the one that's in charge of that group, and I told him, you know, look, you as a partnership, you know, wanting investors to come in and get new horses, and for me as a trainer, you know, it's hard to pass up being 1-5 in a $150,000 race at Indiana Grand. But, you know, this is a Breeders' Cup, and, you know, you get a lot of tension out there, and it'll be good for both of our businesses. And to be quite honest, the 5 furlongs, I think, helps him, because he's a speedy sort, and he has really good tactical speed, and he can sit wherever he needs to. And it seems to me a lot of the horses that look better on paper prefer 6. You know, they prefer a little bit longer. Even, you know, Hoagie, and I know he got a bad break, and a Mongolian that ran against us in the Woodford, you know, 5 doesn't, you know, I don't think 5 helps them. If it was 6, you know, or if it's 5.5, you know, I think, but being that it's shorter, you know, we can sit off the pace and make a run at the end, and I think get a piece of it. You know, I mean, it's a Breeders' Cup, you know. I mean, I don't have any inkling that either of these two horses, if we do enter Bullard, are going to go win the Breeders' Cup races that they're in. But, you know, if you can finish 3rd or 4th in those kind of races, you know, that's all we can really ask for. You know, anything more than that's like icing on the cake. So,
well, turf sprints are always kind of a roulette wheel anyway. You need everything to go your way, whether you have the best horse in the race or the worst horse. It's all about the break and the trip, and you know, it could be you, right? It could be your day. You don't want to be in the barn on the day that it's your day. So
no, that is correct. And what you said about the turf sprints are exactly correct. I mean, he had the trip of a lifetime at Keeneland. You know, Greg Foley's horse always goes to the lead. You know, why he backed up like that day, you know, we don't know, but he has a tendency sometimes to do that. Sometimes he doesn't, and he keeps going, and he, you know, beats everybody. Going into that race, we'd have been happy with 2nd, you know. We wanted to get Bushero graded stakes placed because, you know, in a smaller state, he probably has a stud career, you know, because he still has his boy parts, unlike Bullard. So that was the whole goal of and everything just set up perfect. And, you know, you're right. If it sets up perfect for him in the Breeders' Cup, I mean, he could just as well win it too. I know the European horses, the 2 that are coming, you know, over there, they basically usually run traditionally their sprints in a straight line too. And, you know, 5 furlongs on the turf at Del Mar, those are pretty tight turns. Not saying that they can't do it or it'll take away from them. I mean, look, we're going to be 30-1 in the race, and Lady Aurelia in there is going to be 2-5. I get all that. But, you know, there's some benefits that we have that, you know, our horse is run on the tight turns at over in America quite a bit. And, you know, like I said, at the end of the day, he probably is a turf sprinter. So, you know, he just happens to make a lot of money on dirt because he took advantage of the Indiana bred program. And, you know, after he ran through his conditions in Indiana, we had to ship around all over the place. And he ran a really bang up race in Mountaineer, got beat by a horse that day that freaked like Bullard's Alley did. You know, he was a horse from Thistle Down, same first growth, that just came and caught him. And you never on paper would have ever thought that would have happened, but you never on paper would have thought Bullard's Alley would run the way he did either. So,
Tim, how cool would it be as somebody who was raised in Indiana, attended Indiana University, to win a Breeders' Cup race with an Indiana bred? How cool would that be?
That's really special. I mean, it was special enough, you know, winning that race down at Keeneland. And, you know, I didn't even realize until afterwards. I mean, I know Dick Enberg, who presented the trophy, graduated from IU, and I didn't even think about it. But that's like an irony of ironies. You know, that's the one trophy you presented for I think he only presented one in our race. And he graduated from IU. There's an IU trainer with a Indiana bred that wins a Graded Stake at Keeneland. Sort of like it was sort of meant to be for that day or something, you know.
Did he say anything to you afterwards, or did he just hand you the trophy?
No, to tell you the truth, it was just sort of like Sunday with Buller's Alley. I just forgot about everything. I was thinking about before the race, you know, that's cool. Dick Enberg went to IU, and I wish I would have gone up and said something to him. And but after we won, all that was out the window. I totally forgot all my thoughts for like the last 2 days before that. So.
Well, you'll get to see him again at Del Mar because he's a regular visitor there, and I'm sure he'll be there for the Breeders' Cup, so maybe you can shoot the breeze with him when you get there.
Yeah, that sounds like a plan.
Would have been nice if he would have at least said, "Oh my," when he handed you the trophy.
He might not have had any tickets on him. How'd you like to have that parlay?
Two
Tim Gleishaw stakes winners in the week.
Yeah, unbelievable week for our special guest, Tim Gleishaw, here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on HRRN. He now turns his attention to the Breeders' Cup, as do we here on the network. We'll be there as your exclusive radio home. Make sure you join us and see a complete Breeders' Cup week schedule on our website at horseracingradio.net. So, Tim, you wake up and you've won two Graded Stakes in 8 days. What's that feeling like for a trainer?
It's really special. You know, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, guys like me with 20, 25 horses don't do this very often, you know. That's the way I felt after Keeneland. And it's even a better feeling when you know, you add a grade one to it. It's obviously very satisfying, like we've already been over. You know, we put in a lot of hard work. I started by clearing out a stock account and claiming my first four horses on my own, $5,000 and $75,000 horses. I did not grow up in Lexington or any other place that's with a horse family. I graduated from IU. I taught school for 3 years. Decided I didn't want to do that. That wasn't for me, even though I do miss coaching, I have to admit. I coached basketball and soccer. I went to TaylorMade internship program at TaylorMade Farm to learn about horses, because the only horses I'd ever been around were the Lipizzan Stallions at the Shrine Circus, because my grandfather put it on every year, and we became really good friends with the people that had the Lipizzan Stallions. So I had no idea how to take care of a horse, no idea how to do anything with a horse. I got a hot walker job after TaylorMade with Bob Holtis, who's sort of like my mentor, who's not with us anymore. He's a Midwest trainer for a long time and pretty well known all over. He taught me a lot. I went to work for Cole Norman for a couple of years, which I learned a lot about claiming horses in that barn. And then I cleared out my stock account and started claiming horses. So it's been a rough ride, believe me. I mean, you know, we've had other really nice horses, but none that have ever won Graded Stakes. You know, I mean, we had Unreachable Star was the all-time money leader in Indiana history until Lady Foghorn passed him. And hopefully, if we're lucky, Bechera will pass her, because I feel that that's our spot. We had Grand Traverse, who won a 10-9-2 for us and went on and won the Bonapal down at Fairgrounds and made over $500,000. We've had Reddy's Rocket, who's the all-time modern-day leader and wins at Churchill Downs history. We had Tap Town, who made over $500,000 in a year and was 4 years ago scratched the Breeders' Cup on race day, which was like the major disappointment of my career. And there's others. We've won Claiming Crown Race with Tibbin, and we've had some other really nice horses too. But obviously this is the top of the top. You know, when you're running grade twos and you're winning grade one races, and, you know, to be honest with you, our barn is a bunch of normal horses that people did not pay a lot of money for. You know, sometimes people in our barn, sometimes my wife get upset because we don't have better horses, but I try to make her understand we just have to do the best with what we get. And I think these are two examples of doing the best with what we get. You know, Bullard cost, Wayne bought Bullard at the Fasig Tipton Melnick dispersal for 11 grand. And I think Harlan bought Bushiro at OBS for 47,000, I believe. So, you know, you're not talking like the guys that go spend 800, a million for a horse here and expect them to go out and do these kind of things. So they're just everyday workmanlike horses, and, you know, that's sort of what our barn is. It's those kind of horses, and so it's very pleasing to get to play at a top level that most people in my situation don't get to play at. We're just very, very fortunate that these two horses have taken us there.
You know, Tim, you now have absolutely no excuse. You have my number. You know how to get a hold of Jude and I. So the next time you saddle a horse like Bullard's Alley at 42-1 and it wins by 10 3/4 lengths, or the next time Bucero wins at 26-1, don't be afraid to use our numbers here and let us know before the race that this is going to happen.
Yeah. Well, that's a funny story. Bob Holtis used to tell all the people in the racing office at Oakland that I'm going to eventually be a good trainer because I was a very good handicapper. When I worked for Bob, this is way before full card simulcasting, and you only had one track to bet on, I got to know all the horses at Oakland, and I, you know, only made $400 a week grooming for them, but I'd always have $3,000 or $4,000 with me because I bet horses and did well at it. So forward to Sunday at Woodbine, only had a few hundred dollars. You know, things get tight with us sometimes. So I said, you know what, I'll bet a superfect on the race just in case Bullard wins. I put him on top. I had the horse, Mike Maker's horse, always include his. I had the horse from California because I thought it would run well, even though the off turf was a question. And, you know, Tim, the one that Bob said was a very good handicapper, leaves out Adrian O'Brien's horse for fourth. So that cost me $20,000. Anyway, maybe I'm not as good at handicapping as I once was.
That's still pretty good. Could have played the try. And betting straight is good when you pay $82, but it's a tough racket. There's no question about it.
Stick to training, Tim.
Yeah, because that might have been the dumbest thing ever. I mean, the guy's getting ready to set a record for grade one races won. And, you know, the only reason I didn't use the horse is because, you know, sort of like why I'm against the Japan trip and everything. I mean, of course, they could use Lasix, but, you know, that horse, Idaho of his, had run in England, then flew to New York, then back to France, then back to Woodbine. And I'm like, you know, and obviously nobody knows his horses better than him, but from a handicapping angle, I was just like, Jesus, I mean, you know, how can this horse continue to run really well, really well, you know, shipping all over the world like that, back and forth and back and forth. And they ran a really, really good race and cost me $20,000, so I'll know better next time.
Tim Gleishaw with us on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. We're going to get to a real quick commercial break. When we come back, we'll continue this visit. Stay with us. It is Trainer Talk, and it's all presented by Fasig Tipton. The October sale at Fasig Tipton, featuring nearly 1,500 yearlings by the nation's top sires. Recent Grade 1 graduates include Annals of Time.
Annals of Time, a striking one.
Girvin.
And Girvin gets up to win by a nostril.
And More Spirit.
More Spirit has dominated the Met Mile.
Plus other prominent greatest stakes winners. Your last chance to buy yearlings in 2017 is at the October sale at Fasig Tipton, October 23rd through the 26th in Lexington, Kentucky. Where will you be?
Join us for Jim McKay Maryland Million Day, Saturday, October 21st at Laurel Park. Come with friends and family to Maryland's Day at the Races. It's a celebration of Maryland's horses and lots of fun for all ages. First post is 12:15 with 11 exciting races. And don't miss the first annual hat contest with 3 categories and wonderful prizes. Join in the fun today at Laurel Park. For more information, visit MarylandMillion.com or MarylandRacing.com.
Stuart Morris possesses 30 years of experience in the thoroughbred business and started consigning horses on his own just 2 years ago. Already, one of his sales graduates, Malagasy, found himself on the Kentucky Derby Trail
and now has 3 2-year-old stakes winners in 2017. Tremont winner He Hate Me, undefeated Kelly's Humor, winner of the Ellis Park Debutante, and Pacific Gal, who won Monmouth's Sorority Stakes. Those three coming from just 65 yearlings sold by Stuart Morris last year. Visit the Stuart Morris consignments at upcoming sales to find your next winner.
Bloom Racing.
Majestic City could also still do it, and here he comes.
Majestic City running a big one.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Soul Driver the leader, though. Soul Driver in front.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best.
Super Saver Ross O'Brien, one of the names in the class.
And to stand the best. Windstar Farm, dedicated to the dream.
Earn 25% more for every win when you send your horse to Virginia by taking advantage of the new Virginia Certified Program. Simply send your horse to reside in Virginia for 6 months prior to December 31st of their 2-year-old year and be eligible for a 25% owner's bonus for wins in New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Delaware, Maryland, and West Virginia, regardless of state bred status. There's value in Virginia with the new Virginia Certified Program. Visit vabred.org for details.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Top of the home stretch and Bullets Alley first for the judge. Down the center, Oscar nominated. Eruptus making ground, Messy Heart at it. And trying to get a run is Flamboyant. Bullets Alley stole a march on them. Bullets Alley's five in front. Oscar nominated in second. Then Erupt, Idaho making ground. And they have inside the final furlong. No hope of catching Bullets Alley. Bullets Alley has just dominated the Patterson Canadian International. And waltzes in. Scores by 9 lengths. Oscar nominated second, Flamboyant third, Idaho fourth, and then came Erupt.
Robert Geller with the call of that Grade 1 Patterson Canadian International this past week at Woodbine. And yeah, that's what you want to hear when your horse is coming down the stretch, that the rest of the field has no hope of catching him. And they didn't on Sunday. 10¾ lengths, the official winning margin. That is a record for the Grade 1 Canadian International, and it belongs to Bullard's Alley this past Sunday. Tim Gleishaw is our special guest on Trainer Talk, and we want to welcome everybody back to the program here this afternoon. Mike Penna, Jude Feld in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios. If you miss any portion of this show or any of our shows, all you have to do is head over to our website. That's horseracingradio.net. So many people listening to the programs on podcast. You can do it there. You can also do it at Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. And JT, some great stuff coming out of the first half of the program. We talked in depth about that huge win by Bullard's Alley. And there you go. You get a chance to hear it coming out of the break. Pretty cool.
Yeah, it was sensational. I watched the race on television at home between football games, and I was so excited because I knew it was Tim's horse, and you know I like to root for the little guys, and it was great. And I go, wow, that's just out of body experience right there. I could relate.
Tim, when you joined us in 2013, one thing you told us is that your philosophy, and it I'm assuming it remains the same to this day, was that if you take care of them, they'll take care of you. Talking about the horses, it appears like they're doing that.
Yeah, I definitely think so. I mean, we don't, you know, we try to do what's best for them. They get babied a lot. They, you know, my wife had balloons and apples and peppermints for Bullard's Alley when he got back from Canada, and, you know, he was very interested in all that. You know, we just try to, we don't have any kids together, so we basically treat them like they're our kids, you know. Sometimes they have to be disciplined, you know. Sometimes, you know, you have to make them do what you want to do. We have a 2-year-old filly now that's like that. She's a little, you know, doesn't want to do what we want her to do, and we're trying to teach her that, what to do things what we want her to do. But we try to take the best care we can of all of our horses. And I've gotten some comments in the last few days, you know, we're mainly a claiming stable. And, you know, like some owners jokingly would say to me, you know, don't forget about our Indiana bred that's in tomorrow, you know, in a little Indiana allowance race. And we treat them all the same. You know, I'm not going to lie to you. You know, I'm sure I know Bushero gets a little extra attention up at Indiana. That's where he's back at right now because his exercise rider and his groom for the last 2 years are up there. And I didn't want to change anything going into the Breeders' Cup, so we sent him back to Indiana instead of keeping him at Churchill. And Bullard at Churchill, he gets a little extra attention too. But all the horses in our barns, we try to have our hands on them all the time and you know, just treat them like they're our pets, which is a bad thing for owners to do, mind you, because they don't ever want to go into claiming races. But, you know, for trainers, we can still treat them like pets and know where what level they belong to run at. So,
Tim, you know, so often in this game, people will say, hey, I want to get into owning horses. I'm not exactly sure how to go about doing it, but I heard your trainer talk show, and I listened to this trainer, and I decided to get in touch with them and find out more about it. So when you have people, you mentioned some of your owners, when you have people that come to you and say, hey, I'm thinking about buying a racehorse or getting involved in owning a racehorse, what do you tell them?
You know, it all depends on how quick they want to do it. You know, I mean, the first thing that usually everybody wants to do is go to the yearling sale and buy a yearling. And if you want some quick action, that's probably the worst thing to do, you know. It all depends on how much money somebody has when they come and how much they want to spend. If they want to spend, you know, I've had guys come to me and say, look, Tim, I have $200,000 to spend. I suggest that they claim a nice horse. We go to the two-year-old sale and buy a nice horse, and then you go to the yearling sale, and then you have something for each level, not level, but each time period, you know. I've had people that come to me with $5,000 and want to claim, you know, obviously they have to claim something. You're not going to buy something privately for $5,000. You know, there's plus and minuses to everything. You know, you're getting a pretty pristine horse at a yearling sale. At a two-year-old sale, sometimes they can be hard on them. We've had fairly good luck going down there, concentrating on certain cosigners and stuff. And if you give them a little time off as soon as the sale's over, usually everything goes really, really well. And that's a quicker turnaround. You know, that usually if everything goes right, within 4 or 5 months, they're making a start. Obviously, claiming, you have a horse that can start in 2 weeks, but you also don't know what you're getting. I mean, believe me, we know the horses on our circuit. We know what horses bleed, what horses have ankles, what horses have knees. So we obviously try to stay away from those kind of horses. And sometimes that can backfire on you. You know, you have a horse that you know, that such trainer X has that has a knee, and that thing won like 9 times since you decided to pass on claiming it for 25. But, you know, you can't vet the horse out when you're claiming it. You can't scope it. You know, at the sales, you can do all those kind of things. So it all just depends on, you know, what kind of money the owner or the ownership group wants to spend and how quick they want action. Definitely nothing wrong with going and buying yearlings, but you have to understand that's probably a year and a half process until, well, maybe not a year and a half, at least a full year until that horse is going to be ready to run, more like a year and a half most of the time. So when you consider that, you know, the possibility of shin bucking and this and that, I mean, you know, it is a year and a half probably from the time you buy the horse at the sale. So
when you have a small stable like you do, you have the time to educate the owners. How important is that when you're running a small stable?
You know, it's just like probably the big guys. They have some, we have a lot that listen and want to be educated. We have a handful that sometimes it just has to be proven to them, you know. I mean, you can tell them that their horse needs to run for maiden 30, that's what it's worth, and you have to pound its head 3 or 4 times maiden special weight before they figure out that you were right. But most of our owners, all of our owners are very good people, you know. I don't have a complaint about any of them. Some of them just listen to the trainer's advice a little bit more than others, but I think probably every barn has that issue, you know. But we've had, ever since we started acquiring owners after I claimed my first four horses, you know, we've been lucky to have a very, very good owners. You know, we've had, just like everybody, every other trainer in this industry, some that stick us owing us money and this and that. But for the most part, we've had a really, really, really good group of owners, and they pretty much listen to what I tell them. And, you know, hey, I'm not always right either. None of us are as trainers. You know, we can, just like this, you know, I told you about Bullard's Alley suggesting to go to the Breeders' Cup, you know, I mean, he could go there and finish last, you know, I mean, and then I look like a bum. But, you know, all we can do is go with our hearts and our, you know, what we know and what we believe about our horse and give them the best information we can. You know, just like every other trainer, I've had horses in for tags before they get claimed. The owner gets mad, but most of them don't. They all understand the game, and having mainly claiming horses, you know, that's good that they need to understand the game, because I'll have owners come to me and say, look, let's drop that horse even before I'm ready to drop it, just because they know the game and they want to win races. I have some pretty experienced ownership groups in our barn right now. But, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned, you know, when new owners come to you, what do you suggest? You know, the only thing that we don't get every year is an influx of two-year-olds. You know, everybody asks why my first-time starter stats are so bad and this and that. Well, part of it's because, you know, we just don't go to the sale and have people have, you know, 15, 22-year-olds waiting for us when we get back to Kentucky. You know, again, back to the take what we get and do the best we can with them. You know, it would be nice to have, you know, that opportunity to have some nice two-year-olds that could, you know, potentially compete in the nicer three-year-old races, both for the boys and for the girls. But that opportunity hasn't happened yet. But, you know, I don't give up on it. I'm a pretty positive person. You know, I think someday that people will notice what we do, and it's just taken a long time. And hopefully with these two races that we've just won in a short span of time, that some people pay attention, and if they want somebody that is pretty hands-on, that touches their, you know, horse once a day, and that pays a lot of attention to what they're going on and what their horse treated, you know, not like a commodity, you know, maybe I'll get some phone calls after all this goes on. And I would hate to think that we'd have to go out and run well with two long shots in the Breeders' Cup for that to happen. But I'm sure there's some people out there that listen to your show and have been paying attention to the headlines and this and that, from the last couple of weeks, and hopefully we can pick up some new owners. And just want my current owners out there, that's nothing against them. You know, we were up to 50 at one point. We're down to about 24, 25 horses now. I would like to be back up to about 40, 45. You know, that seems like a really good manageable number. I don't want to be like some of the guys out there, some of them that are my friends, mind you, that have 200, 150, 300 horses. That just seems absolutely insane to me. I would never, you know, do anything. You never have any type of life or anything whatsoever. The problem is, and I understand those guys, you never know when the next big horse is going to come. I mean, look at Bullard's Alley. If you're one of those big guys and Wayne Spalding comes to you and say, hey, I just bought this horse for $11,000 in the phasic dispersal, one of those big guys probably tells him to get lost. You know what I mean? And, you know, that's why a lot of those big guys just take all those horses, because you don't know which is going to be your next big horse. You know, it could be one that your owner paid $800,000 for that you're really happy to get, or it could be one like Bullard that they paid $11,000 for, and, you know, most people aren't going to be, the big guys aren't going to get excited about getting, but they still take them because you don't know how they're going to turn out. So,
Tim Gleishaw with us on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. Tim, what's the best part about being a horse trainer?
Being around horses. You know, I grew up, my mother has always been a big animal person. We always had the most dogs in the city of Evansville city limits that you could have without a kennel license, and always had cats, and always had parakeets, turtles, everything. She works for the Humane Society in Evansville now, so I think that's probably where it started. But I started watching horse racing back when Easy Goer and Sunday Silence would run against each other all the time. That's about the only thing we ever got on, you know. Mind you, when I grew up, we still only had four channels, right? Three and PBS. So I just always loved watching it. I used to go over to Ellis Park when I could. and watch, you know, obviously at that point cheaper horses run, and just thought that they were. Legs and ankles, and it's just amazing deal. And I think that they're the best athletes in the world, and just getting to be around them every day. And don't get me wrong, there's ups and downs. We'll come in, and one of our horses that we had high hopes for has a swollen tendon. You know what I mean? It's just like, it's no different than, you know, you root really, really hard for a baseball or basketball team, and your star player has something go wrong. You know, that's part of athletics. But just to be around horses every day, I had the benefit of having my wife with me for the last 5 years doing this. She used to be a track photographer at Lone Star at Louisiana Downs, and most recently at Churchill, until she decided to be my full-time assistant. And she comes from a horse racing family. Her dad, Ronald Ardoin, won over, like, I think 5,300 races. He's in the top 20 all time. So she knows about horses. You know, this game gets to her a lot more than it does me sometimes, the down parts of it. Like I said, I'm mainly a positive person. Not that I don't get upset at times, but, you know, have to think that everything's going to be okay. And you know what? I mean, a lot of times when we're down on horses, and a lot of times when our financial situation's not good, like this current year from being under the quarantine, everything always works out. And just have to keep thinking that it's going to do that. But the biggest pleasure to being a horse trainer is to being around horses all the time. They're by far the easiest of all the aspects of things to deal with. When you have horses, owners, jocks, agents, jockeys, the horses are the easy part, believe me.
Dude, I can see you smiling over here. You concur.
Wholeheartedly. Do I concur? Yeah. No. If you could just hang out with your horses all the time and not have to deal with all the peripheral stuff, it would be a pleasure. I always wished I had my own stable, you know, just trained for myself, not have to listen to, why did you put this rider on? Why are you running on the turf? Why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? You know, my clients used to ask me, how come you do so well with your own horses? Like I had given them preferential treatment. No, I could do that with your horse if you'd let me run them where I want, use the rider that I want. You know, I mean, it's not brain surgery, but when too many personalities get involved, you know, there becomes issues.
Tim, if it was easy, everyone would do it, right?
Oh, that's true. And part of the point he brings up about jockeys is really, really funny. I reposted a thing on a little article on Facebook, and I have no idea who wrote it. But it's the jockey you want versus the jockey you need. And that's probably one of the major, you know, not major, most brought up, and I don't want to say arguments, discussions that I have with owners, is that a lot of times they want all the top jocks, and certain horses, the top jocks don't fit. You know, you have to use some of those horses, a hungrier rider, a mid-level rider, that's going to be hungry and going to want to go out and go. Those some of the top jocks have already made their money. Now, look, kind of races we're running in now with these two horses that we just show, I have, you know, full belief that you could probably put anyone on. Bichero hasn't had any what you'd consider top riders on him, but you know, Javier Castellano rode Bullard up at Woodbine last time, and he ran a great race. You know what I mean? So when you get up to these kind of horses, I'm talking about your, you know, claiming $5,000, your claiming $10,000 horses, or a horse that just has special needs, maybe that needs to be kept up, you know, you have to keep him involved the whole race. You know what I mean? And everyone always wants the top jock, and sometimes that's not the best choice. And that's probably the most thing that's discussed amongst owners, that and where to run horses, obviously. But, you know, like I said, I have no complaints with my owners. You know, we do have those discussions sometimes, and getting ready to have a big discussion tonight on where to run one of them in this next race, you know, so... but it's a good problem to have.
Tim, when people go to your website, which is GlyshawRacingStable.com, and they visit the About Us page, they'll see a photograph of a horse laying in a stall, and you leaned across the back of that horse with your arm around the horse, and your head is kind of on the back of the horse, almost as if you're sleeping on top of the horse. What's the story behind that photo?
Well, that's Unreachable Star. That was our Indiana bred that had the record until, Anthony Granite's horse, Lady Foghorn, passed it. Very nice horse, by the way. Very nice mare. He actually was a horse that was given to my owner for free, and he became the all-time money leader in Indiana. So he's very special to us. Recently, he's been about 6 months out of the year. He's the resident horse of the Kentucky Derby Museum, which is sort of cool. I can go up there and see him whenever I want. Lady up there gets a little mad at me because he still tries to bite and play with me all the time, and she says she doesn't allow that, but I told her he's probably not going to stop that with me. So, the rest of the time he's out at the owner's farm, David and Lauren Osborne. They have a Deerfield farm out in Prospect, Kentucky. He's turned out there now. Still thinks he knows he's special, and, you know, can't believe that he's standing out in a paddock when it's cold and that kind of stuff. Looks at him like, don't you know who I am? But anyway, the long story about how they got the horse, they owned a horse named Unloosened, and Unloosened was a sire for a while. And they went up to this lady's farm, Dr. Crystal Chapel in Indiana, and wanted to buy the last and then Unloosened died. I forgot that part of the story. So they wanted an offspring of Unloosened, preferably a filly, and they went up and bought one. And there were some corgis running around, and Lauren had said to Crystal, those are such cute corgis. She's like, oh, I breed those too. Do you want one? And she talked to her husband, David, to taking it. And in the meantime, Dr. Chapel, the owner up there, said that, you know, if you take that horse, if you take the corgi and that horse, I'll throw this other horse in and I'll haul it to Louisville to your farm. And that was the throw-in of the deal. The horse they bought for $7,500 got claimed from us for $7,500 at Turfway that winter in a maiden 75 race. And Unreachable Star went on to make almost $800,000 in Indiana bred races. And probably had his biggest day of his career, the proudest moment until now, until this current week, until Bullard won his graded stake last year, was Unreachable Star beating three other than allowance horses by 8 lengths. And I think there were 2 or 3 graded stakes winners in that race at Churchill Downs when Calvin rode it. So that was a pretty big deal for me at the time. That was the biggest, you know, and now we've moved on to bigger and better things, but we haven't forgotten about him. So,
wow. Amazing story, huh? The gift horse becomes the all-time leader.
Yeah, that is a cool story. That happens sometimes. The one that you get as the throw-in turns out to be the best one. Sometimes,
yeah, you look at it right now, my 3 highest money earners that I've trained are Bowler's Alley on Top that they bought for $11,000, Unreachable Star that was given to them for free because they agreed to take a dog, and Bouchero, who they paid $47,000 for. So sort of like not like your usual top horses in someone's stable. So.
Yeah, it's not like the Coolmore $850,000 or $1.2 million in a, and it goes to show what you said is true. I mean, you have to make the best out of what you get, and you've certainly done that.
Yep. I mean, you know, all you can do is keep doing what you do, and hopefully good things come to you. And I mean, I know that everybody, and myself included, you know, when all those guys win big races, I congratulate them. But I had like 342 text messages and many of those from Kentucky circuit on the Indiana circuit that I'm in. And, probably most enjoyable. And that was very, 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 pleasing to me to have those guys congratulating you, and think mainly because lots of people back there like us. We're not very confrontational. We mind our business, and we're pretty good people. But the thing that meant a lot to me was there were a ton of other trainers, owners, pretty big name people that I'm not going to mention on the air, that texted me or instant messaged me on Facebook or called and left messages, because I don't know how many phone calls I got, but you know, we were taken up doing interviews probably for an hour and a half after the race, and I had like 24 voice messages. So, you know, that meant a lot that other people's owners were paying attention to. Not that I want to steal them or anything, but it's just, you know, nice that, you know, you're used to hearing the congratulations from, you know, all your owners and all the people, you know, my mom and Natalie's parents and, and all these people that are, that have something to do with our barn, but the people that were out from outside our barn that all congratulated us. Even Javier Castellano's agent texted me congratulations and, you know, cause he had ridden the horse once before, and that's the only way he knows me. I wouldn't know him if he was standing in front of me, you know, his agent. So, that's pretty cool too. So, and then all the press attention, I mean, it's just amazing. You know, we had mentioned off the air that, you know, there's a lot of people on there that have been texting things and my owners getting arguments with them on social media about, you know, this or that about Buller's Alley's performance. But I just ignore all that. You know, maybe growing up playing sports, you know, you have to ignore, you know, I was never the best athlete in the world, but I was decent in high school, and you just ignore all the crowd. You ignore what all the other people say, and you just keep doing what you're doing and do the right thing. And, you know, hopefully good things happen to you.
Tim Gleischaw here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Tim, I'm always curious with trainers that train for so many years and then finally break through with a graded stakes winner like you did in 2016. I guess you were 13 years into your career at that point. Is there ever a time when you kind of doubt yourself and say, maybe I didn't make the right decision here?
Not particularly like that, but I'll tell you, after the quarantine in New Orleans this winter, and our barn was quarantined, as I've mentioned, right after we were eligible to run again, our next, not the next eight in a row, but in the next month and a half, they claimed eight horses from us. They're right to do, you know what I mean? We're in a claiming race, you know, that they want a horse, they think they can do well with it. I'm not sure how well any of them did, really. Actually, I don't think they did that well, but that's a side note. But you know, we had a shell of an operation coming back to Kentucky, and not even enough horses to fill up my stalls at Churchill. We replaced those with horses to come back to us off of injuries, two-year-olds that, you know, that's far, far down the line when these horses are going to run. Some Indiana breds that we have every year, and then just things started going well. But at that point, I mean, I have to be honest, I was thinking, you know, are we going to be able to make this? You know, I mean, obviously thinking of, you know, are there family members, are there big owners of mine that, you know, the some of the rich owners I have that would let me borrow money to keep my business going, because that's the position we were in. Literally probably about a month or two months ago, we finally got all our back bills paid off from not being able to run and losing all those horses at the fairgrounds. So that makes what happened in the last week even sweeter. And to be honest with you, none of it was expected. And like I said, things were going really well before then. Bechero had won 100,000. I had a horse named Polar Vortex that won an Indiana bred race 100,000
yes.
up there. That's our usual. You know what I mean? I mean, we those are our big days. You know, those are, and then, you know, things are just a lot different now with winning these two kinds of races. And you know what? I've been trying to be very humble and really realistic about it. You know, and I've told Wayne and Farron, Buller's Alley will probably never run a race like that again in his life. He'll probably, I can almost guarantee you he'll never run the numbers like that he did in his life. So you just have to be happy that he chose to do it in the biggest race he's ever run it, you know?
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, things are just on a different level now. But you know what? Like I said earlier in the first segment of the interview, those horses, we have a filly in tomorrow, Roscoe Frade, that was what was given to us earlier this year, trainer transferred to us, and she finished third in a stake and has won an allowance race up there at Indiana. And you know, I want that horse to win just as much as I wanted Buller to win, because you know those people entrust me to train their horse. They, you know, that is their Canadian International Day, and that is their Woodford Day. You know, they don't have a horse that can compete in those kind of races, so that's just a big deal to them, and yeah. I want their horse to do well in those kind of races.
Really,
you know?
Special. Tim Gleischaw, our special guest. Tim, don't mean to cut you short, but we are just about out of time here on the show tonight. Really appreciate the visit, my friend, and all the best moving forward. We'll see you at Del Mar.
All right, sounds good. I'll talk to you guys out there.
All right, Tim Gleischaw here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Always fun.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, you never know what you're going to get here, and Tim was tremendous tonight. Don't forget, check it out, horseracingradio.net. For Lee Dallapina and Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening.